हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
A little embarrassed, the saintly Babaji said, "Saintly brother, I will teach you as far as I am able, but I am not qualified to be an initiating spiritual master. However that may be, you should now learn about pure Vaishnava religion." There's some in the material world policy. Oh yeah, surrender to their emotions, okay. This is maybe where we left. Faithful Lahiri Mahashai then said, "Is there something higher than the impersonal Brahman? The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the origin of the impersonal Brahman, then why do the philosophers not leave the impersonal Brahman and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead instead?" We may have done this also. The saintly Babaji laughed and said, "Brahma, the four Kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami, Narada, Shiva, and other truly great philosophers took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's feet." Lahiri Mahashai said, "If the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a form situated within space, then that form must also be limited in spatial terms. How then can the spatial limited form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead be the resting place of all pervading, spatially limitless impersonal Brahman?" Babaji replied, "Even in the material world, the element ether is also all pervading and spatially limitless. Why then should the impersonal Brahman be considered so glorious? Merely because it is all-pervading and spatially limitless. From the splendor of his transcendental limbs, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests the all-pervading, spatially limitless impersonal Brahman. At the same time, his transcendental form is spatially limited, situated in a specific place. Who has seen anyone like him? Because no one is like him, and because he has no rival, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is superior to the impersonal Brahman. His form is wonderfully active. In his transcendental form, all pervasiveness, omniscience, omnipotence, the great mercy, and the great bliss are gloriously manifested in their completeness. Is this form good? What virtue does it not have? What power does it not have? It is an informless. Amorphous. It is an amorphous, all-pervading, unknowable something good. The truth is that the impersonal Brahman is the qualityless aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Personality and impersonality exist side by side in the handsome form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonal Brahman is merely one aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The formless, changeless, qualityless, unknowable, immeasurable feature of the Lord is liked by short-sighted persons. However, they who see everything do not like any feature but the original and complete form of the Lord. The Vaishnavas cannot place their faith in the formless, impersonal Brahman, for to do so would block their eternal nature and also block their pure love for Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the resting place of both features, the qualityless Brahman and the quality-filled Supreme Person. He is an ocean of transcendental bliss, and therefore he is attractive to all pure spirit souls. So he says it would block if they were, do not place their faith there. So they may deal with it. They may understand it's there, but the faith is not there. Because the difficulty comes, if you put your faith into the impersonal Brahman, then the difficulty comes is that faith should have, there should be some exchange, some interaction. The soul is looking for some interaction. But with the difficulty comes is that there's no interaction with the impersonal Brahman. Actually, people have taken up approaching the impersonal Brahman because they don't want interaction. That's the thing. They've had so much interaction in this world. And they found difficulty with that. So then the conclusion is therefore, if I get rid of interaction, then there'll be no problem. Like if people give me problem, you get rid of all the people, there'll be no problem. That kind of thing. Rather than, there's also proper demons. There's also proper demons. So this difficulty then arises, is that the impersonalist says short-sighted. They see just the immediate. I have some immediate problem, and if I can get rid of this problem by getting rid of the immediate cause that I see. But actually the cause is longer. They see is, okay, dealing with the material energy, having desire for the material energy, trying to enjoy, control and enjoy the material energy, is a problem. So therefore, I should give that up. But, and they say, well, I am soul. But that's short-sighted. They've seen the material world, they've understood their soul, but they haven't actually understood the transcendental nature. They see Brahman, and they see the material energy is Brahman, the soul is Brahman. What they haven't actually understood is that there's an original Brahman that is full of transcendental happiness and exchange that looks similar to what we call here the material world. So if they can see that, then they actually become transcendentalists. Otherwise they're not actual transcendentalists. It means they know Brahman, but because the soul has more qualities than that. It means Brahman, everything is Brahman. Brahman means it's Krishna's energy. Krishna, Krishna's energy. It means everything is Brahman, transcendental. Not transcendental, but made out. It's coming from Krishna. It's his energy. So then, by this definition, there's still within that there is variation. The idea is that material, there's variety, so therefore spiritual must be no variety. But this kind of logic is not very well thought out, very short-sighted. Is that within the spiritual there can be variety. So Brahman is one of the varieties. The soul is another variety. The transcendental exchange between the devotees and the Lord is another variety. And within this, then there's variety. It's just like the material Brahman is the quality of that is less than the spiritual Brahman. What we call the Brahmajyoti. Because the material world is temporary, while the Brahmajyoti is eternal, eternally manifest. Material world is eternal, but it manifests and manifests, manifests and manifests. Its quality is inferior. Brahman is superior to that. But the soul is still superior to Brahman because it has two other qualities that Brahman doesn't have. It has chit and ananda, while the Brahman only has sat. Then you have the Supreme Lord, who is Satchitananda, but he's the origin of everything, and he has all these things in unlimited form, unlimited amounts. So all contradictions we find are reposed in the Lord. The impersonal and the personal are there simultaneously. Everything is coming from him. So then he is an amazing, wonderful person. You cannot find anybody like him. So that's his he's pointing out here. Lahiri. Krishna was born, performed activities, and then left his body at death. How is it possible that his form is eternal? Babaji. Yeah, that's the problem, is it seems we've done so much. But we have not come across a computer nerd yet who can put a bookmark in this. They all put bookmarks, but the bookmarks are all, they, you never get the bookmark that you put. You always end up with something that was, you know, used when Columbus went to America. Then that was the place they were leaving. Yeah, okay. Krishna's form is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. His birth, activities, and so-called death are not material. Lahiri, why do the Mahabharata and other scriptures describe him in that way? The eternal absolute truth is beyond description. Pure souls see Lord Krishna's form in pastimes. These persons then describe these both with words. Those words are like ordinary historical accounts of material persons. They who know the true meaning of the Mahabharata and the other scriptures understand Lord Krishna's pastimes and other features in one way, and the unintelligent materialists understand Lord Krishna's pastimes and other features in a very different way. Means the historical account, especially like you see Mahabharata, then they're written in such a way that it appears that they're just like every other material things. And for Krishna, it's not a problem because he's come to taste the activities of, you know, human activities. Because that's just tasty for him. It means like for the living entity, the material world, human being is nice, but demigods are more nice, mystic yogis, all these kind of things. Because humans are very ordinary. So they like all these ones that have so much power and so much abilities and can do amazing things like that. Because it's actually not their nature, their ability, like that. So they're just infinitesimal sparks, and by the grace of the Lord, they're able to do these things. They're empowered with the various potencies of the Lord to do these things. But for Krishna, he has all those things. Anything he thinks happens. Whatever he wants is done. What he just thinks is truth, like this. So for him, coming and performing the human pastimes is very tasty. It's very interesting, very fun. So he comes in a very normal way, does things. It means Krishna doesn't have to hold up a hill to stop Indra. He doesn't even have to do anything. He can just desire that Indra will be corrected, he'll be corrected. But he uses human methods. You know, it's like when it rains, then you take shelter under something, you put up an umbrella. So then he does that, but he does it in a very amazing way, wonderful way. So he manifests when it's needed, the nature of Godhead, but he still does it through human means, like that. So then there's taste in that. You know, for us, we think, why didn't he just do this, that? Because our taste is in mystic things, or in, you know, some other kind of thing, you know, some other area. But for Krishna, it's not. You know, it's for him, those things are just very ordinary. There's no taste. Because we're thinking of it in relationship to the material, I'll control the material world, so it's me and the material energy. But material energy doesn't reciprocate. That's the thing, is that we're thinking it's happening, you know, it's just a nice... But it's not. You know, it's like myself and we're seeing something. We're very beautiful. Oh, this is very nice. But we're seeing the material energy, but it's not reciprocating with us. It's not reciprocating with the senses. Therefore, there's no taste. I mean, there's a little taste there. It is some rasa because it works on the principle. Means your eyes, because they have the capacity of detecting form, then they draw from what's around form. You could draw so many things, like a tree, you could also draw strength. Why just form? You can draw fire. You can draw many, many things. But you're just taking the form with the eyes. So the eyes are the ashraya. And then the material energy that we're viewing is the vishaya, means the enjoyer. But what is it enjoying? Nothing. And ultimately, it's coming from Krishna, so it's Krishna who's enjoying. But that's a very subtle technical point. But the thing is the material energy, it's not reciprocating. But because we desire it, therefore, then we get something, we think we're enjoying. So it's very minimal that one gets at it. Okay, you look at a nice tree, how much, few moments, you get some happiness with that, and then that's it. But if it's a person and they interact, then so much more is there. Like that. And then if it's on the transcendental platforms with Krishna, then it's so much unlimitedly more than that. So these are the levels of rasa. So there's no interaction. There's nothing there. So the materialist is seeing things according to the material way. And so then these pastimes may be given in such a way that the materialistic person can relate to it. Like that. But ultimately, then the real taste is then in the higher approach. Like you have the same story in the Mahabharata, the same story in the Ramayana, in the Bhagavata. So in the Bhagavatam, then it just deals with the transcendental. It doesn't bother with lower levels.
Isn't the Krishna gets some taste for the...
Yeah, it means Mahavishnu is meditating. Whatever is going on in this whole cosmos, in this whole material world, in all the universes, he's dreaming about it. So just the interaction with him, because it's him. The sense is him. The sense object is him. Just the living entity, it's like, what do you call that? And there's a name for when you enjoy through someone else. It starts with a V, I think. It's generally used a lot in connection with, you have the mother, she's older and can't wear all the things that's in fashion nowadays, so she encourages her daughter to wear vicarious enjoyment. Is that you don't actually enjoy, you just, someone else is enjoying, so then, or you arrange, so then that's your happiness. But so actually, the living entity, the soul, and the senses, sense out, have nothing to do with each other. So what the sense brings in is not what you're enjoying. What one is enjoying is that one has attained what one wanted. You understand? Means the same sense, you taste something. One man's food is another man's poison, right? But the taste on the taste buds is the same. But one person interprets it as good, one interprets it as bad. It's the same taste. You take a lemon, it's sour. Some people like that sourness. They just eat lemons. Another person, they don't even like the, don't want to eat sourness. So the flavor is the same. So it's, you don't like, you have an idea, I will enjoy if I get something sour. So when you get it, and the sense meets the sense object, then the mind is satisfied. Yes, I am happy, because I've gotten it. But the sense and the sense object are dead matter. So is the mind. So what is the soul? How can they get anything out of it? You can only get something that you have. Right? It means eye has fire, it can perceive. Like tongue has the nature to taste, so you can put it. If I take the rasgula and put it on my arm, there'll be no taste. I can feel it, but I can't taste it. The skin can feel, it can't taste. Therefore, there has to be something in common. Otherwise, you can't relate to it. So the soul has nothing in common with the material energy. So actually, there's nothing there, but you just have the idea, if this comes together with this, then I will be happy. Because I identify with that sense. I identify with the eye. So if I see this nice, beautiful landscape, I'll be happy. I am seeing it. The intelligence can pick it out that this is a tree, this is a flower, that's a bush, this is a river. And so like that. And because, and the mind then accepts that, yes, this is a good view of nature. And so now I am happy. Because that's its definition. When I see some nice, beautiful thing, I'm happy. But that's its definition. Reality is the soul has nothing to do with that. Okay, maybe the mind's happy. The intelligence has been engaged, the sense met the sense object. But what has any of that got to do with the soul? Right? So, but all these energies, the energy of the sense object, all that are coming from Krishna. So only he can actually enjoy. When he desires to taste, then the tongue, the object of taste, and taste itself manifests.
So, they said that we're here for our enjoyment, like we're here because we wanted to enjoy, but now it sounds like we're here because Krishna wants to enjoy through us.
No, it's not. He wants to. He doesn't. He's only. See, when you have. When you have the personal, you have the impersonal. How do you have the personal if there's no impersonal? How do you have impersonal if there's no personal? Right? So how do you have eternal unless there's temporary? So it's all part of everything. So naturally, the material world is part of the whole creation. It'll automatically be there. So then Krishna then creates all this. So the living entities want to enjoy separately for Krishna. So then they're put here to deal with the material energy. But it's not that Krishna wants us here, because that enjoyment will be less than the eternal rasa. Right? So for Krishna, he's putting all these things together that the living entity is then trying to enjoy. You know, it's just like the parent is their happiness is creating a situation where the child is happy. Right? And let's say the child likes certain foods, so then the parents take pleasure in arranging those foods or those situations or those, you understand? But that's because the child wants them. Otherwise, Krishna, you know, it's inferior nature. The nature itself is not. The rasa, the interaction down here is nothing. When he expands, it's all his energies.
You mentioned that he comes here because he has some taste when he comes here.
He comes here to exchange with the devotees. That's his taste. The taste is coming here and performing ordinary pastimes with his devotees. Otherwise, if he can do everything by just sitting in one place, so then what will happen? What will we do? We'll all just sit around and meditate? And in this way we all had a great time? No, so therefore he comes, because the purpose is exchange. Happiness comes from exchange. Right? Means we're understanding that principle, then when the sense meets the sense object, even though we're not really involved, we feel that there's been some exchange, so therefore I'm happy. Deeper than that is between people. We'll consider that deeper than the senses. Right? Means basically every people in every culture will consider interaction with people as more important than your own selfish interaction with your senses. Right? They'll always consider it's a higher principle. So it's just the next stage up of rasa. But when it's on the transcendental platform, then that is the best. Because then that actually deals its own level of the soul. The other ones are on the level of material energy. So then Krishna... So exchange is the thing. So for Krishna, what's not important is the opulence and this and that. And so what's important is the exchange that is created through that medium. Right? Just like you give somebody a gift out of appreciation. So what is important in that is what they've done in the relationship or the gift. Right? Somebody gets the gift and they could appreciate you having given it. Or they can just look at the thing without worrying about that, and well, this isn't exactly what I'll use. You know, not so nice. Right? You see, you go and you check in any house, the mother has unlimited funny little things that are based on some exchange. You know, they still have that, you know, crayon picture of the, you know, little mountain with the house sticking off at a 45-degree angle with some little curly smoke and the sun there with a big smile on it. They still have that. You know, all these little things, you know, they have. Because it was exchange, right? You say it doesn't have any material value, it has sentimental value. Right? Because it was exchange. So even then we can understand is that the things themselves aren't what's important, it's the exchange that's important. So then the whole idea is what level of exchange? Because the soul on the first level, sensual and emotional, can't get anything here. Because it's still dealing, emotional means the mind, and the mind is a material element. It's dead matter. So we can't really get something out of it. Though we've decided that when the mind is satisfied because it has gotten its desire, then I'm happy. We've taken this position. Then as the mind works, then we think we're happy. But ultimately, we have to go to the top stage of rasa, the top level, which means exchange between the soul and the Supreme Soul. That exchange then is transcendental. Because then it's the spiritual senses, spiritual mind, spiritual form, spiritual activities. Then one actually tastes rasa. Because that rasa then is on the same quality as the soul. Right? Does that make some sense? Yeah. Okay. So that is what's being pointed out. Is that we should give up the pursuit of material happiness because there's nothing in it for the soul. Though we're conditioned to, yes, if I get this, I'll be very happy. The boy's thinking, if I have a beautiful girl, I'll be happy. But if that beautiful girl doesn't exchange and behave in such a way that the boy appreciates, it doesn't matter how beautiful the girl are, is how they'll stay together. So therefore, it's not really the beauty. It's not really the body. You know, it's exchange. But then that body is temporary. This body is temporary. We're not actually that boy or that girl. So the exchange that's going on is just being done by the modes of nature. Right? You have the same soul. But because of the modes of nature, one acts like a boy, one acts like a girl. It's not the soul doing that. It's the modes of nature doing that. So what's happening is the modes of nature are interacting with the modes of nature. But because we have taken the position, the definition of our happiness is vicariously enjoying the exchange of the material world, the material energy with itself. Because I identify, okay, I'm the boy material energy and this one is the girl material energy. And so when these meet, then I'm happy. But factually, we're not. So therefore, we're not actually getting anything out of it. Well, the only thing we're getting is that I've defined my happiness as when, okay, I decided that this is value to me. I'm happy when boy meets girl. Like that. So therefore, when it happens, then I'm happy. But what has the soul gotten? Nothing. Because the boy is material energy, earth, water, fire, air, ether. You know, mind, intelligence, falsity. And the girl is the same. So these energies that have nothing to do with me, they're exchanging. You know, it's just like little kids. This would be the thing. Little kids, they have dolls, right? Dolls are dead matter. But you get them together and this one, okay, now flying through the air. All this kind of stuff. But there's nothing going on there. There's just dead matter. But I've decided I identify with it. You know, one of the dolls is the good guy, one of the guys is the other guy, you know, so I'm this doll. But what's going on? Nothing. So it's all in the mind. So then we'll say, that's child play, you know. You know, where they get bigger, the real thing. But whether it's that or it's your own body, it's just still the same thing. It's just dead matter. And because of the desire of the living entity, then the modes of nature move it around. I want to go over to the temple. Modes of nature take it over to the temple. I don't take it over to the temple. I simply desire that I should go to the temple. And then the modes of nature then, you know, make the whole mechanism work and go over. It goes over there. Right? If we're really in control, then why we get older, we can't walk, little kids can't walk properly, you're sick, you can't walk. So if we're doing it, then we'd always be able to do it. No, but it depends upon someone else doing it. We didn't decide to get old. Anyone filled out a form? Yes, I want to get old and be senile. I want hair fall out and, you know, can't talk anymore properly and drool and, you know, teeth fall out.
Second and third molar fall out. I'd rather have the incisors fall out. You know, it's much more, you know,
anybody fill out a form like that? No, it just happens. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's just going on. So therefore, all it is that it's going on, but we simply kind of desire in it and take part in it, kind of identify with it. Like you see a movie, then you identify with this character or that character, and you get all involved, and when they're happy, you're happy. When they're sad, you're sad. When they're victorious, then it's great. And when they lose, and you feel... But it's nothing. It's just some movements. People don't exist. The only thing exists is the guy who made it gets rich. That's all. You know, whatever. But even that, the point is, it's not there. But we choose to identify with it. Yes, this is, you know, good. So that's all. It's all just a game. It's just a play. But the game is, we're the ones that we buy into the game. Like that. Because we want to play the game of being God. So when we want to be God, then okay, then come here, be God. Yes, I want to do this, control this, enjoy this. Like that. Does that make sense? So this is the tattva of what's going on. Like that. This is what's actually going on in this place. So it doesn't exist. It's not there. It's not real. The stuff's there, you know, that piece of plastic is there. But what I value it, or that, you know, it's a new computer. Yeah, you know, I got the latest, you know, Pentium 57, you know, it's like this, you know, like this, you know. Or it's like, you know, what? The Pentium 1? Yeah, who cares? It just exists. We put a value to it. You know, we put a value to it. It's not there. So because people want to put values, they want to do that, then Krishna's created values in the world. Krishna's created gold is valuable. Jewels are valuable. You know, various kind of wealth is valuable. Horses, land, grains, family is valuable, country is valuable. All these things are created so that we can come here and, you know, take the parts. Like we're going to have a drama. Everyone knows it's a drama. Yeah, I want to be this part, and I want to be that part, and I'm the king, I'm the minister, I'm the bad guy, I'm the police. So that's what's going on. Krishna sets it, and then we come. Because we want to be God. Okay, you want to be God? Okay, here, go for it. But Krishna sets the rules. Okay. Because it's his place. It's his energy. So you say you want to be God. Okay, you want to be God, so this is how you be God. Right? God's very nice to his mother. Therefore, since you want to be God, you better be nice to your mother. You're not nice to your mother, you go to hell. You lose, right? You know, do not pass go, do not collect $100. Right? Thank God. You want to be the king, okay, you want to be God as king, does like this. You do like this, then it's considered pious. You don't do like this, you go to hell. So we're the ones, so when we get tired of it, the game, and then decide that, okay, I'd rather deal in the real world rather than this world of illusion. Then we decide to take out, I'm not God, I'm the servant. And then we're willing to just go back to where we're supposed to be in the spiritual world and just, you know, carry on with our service.
Yeah. So if we have the same qualities of God, when we take that role, why can't we act it as God does?
Because we're not God. We're energy. We're not... See, God is the source of everything. So He's male. So because He's the source of it, He is the enjoyer of it. He is the Vishai. Energy is servant. I mean, something expanded from something else is portion of that and is naturally attracted to and serves its source. So therefore, everything other than, you know, Braja Krishna is servant. Right? So then we cannot be the enjoyer. Our enjoyment is when Krishna is happy, we're happy. That's the mood of servant. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, that's why only he is the enjoyer. He's male. We're not. We're female. Female enjoys by serving the shelter. Does that make sense? Yeah. So when we take that mood of servant up and serve Krishna, then we become happy. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else from this? Or?
Lahiri, when one meditates on Lord Krishna's form, in one's heart naturally rises the idea of a form limited by both time and space. What other way is there to think of Lord Krishna's form? Babaji, thinking is an activity of the mind. As long as the mind is not purified and spiritualized, the mind's activity of thinking and meditating cannot be spiritual in its nature. When it develops a devotional attitude, the mind gradually becomes spiritualized. Then the mind's activity of thinking and meditating is inevitably spiritual in nature. When the Vaishnava devotees who delight in devotional service chant the holy names of Lord Hari, the material world has no power to touch them. They are spiritualized. Residing in the spiritual world, they meditate on Lord Krishna's daily pastimes. In this way, they attain the bliss of confidential service to the Lord. So if the mind is mundane, it will only think of mundane things. It becomes spiritualized and it will think of spiritual things. Because the mind accepts and rejects. So if it has not been purified and not been spiritualized, then it's not going to choose spiritual. It will always choose material. If it's spiritualized, then it will work within the realm of spiritual and accept and reject based on that. But this is good, not good, like that. So then you get... So the whole point is that when we purify ourselves and the mind becomes pure, then we can be absorbed in thinking of the Lord. Like that. It's just like, let us say, we're very hungry and we have a certain preparation that we're very attracted to. We don't have to force the mind by some sadhana to think of eating that item. And not only that, we're just thinking of one item. Right? But we think about it from this way, that way, so many different ways we think about it. It looks like it's a really big show, but it's only just one thing. So we've created this whole spontaneously because the mind is material. But when it becomes spiritualized, then it starts to deal in the realm of spiritual. Then it'll do exactly the same thing. Therefore, just one quality of Krishna, one thing of Krishna, one thing he said or done, then the mind will look at it from so many different ways and be completely absorbed. So by that process, then it becomes inevitably spiritual, becomes situated, and just fully absorbed in spiritual. So it accepts and rejects based on the spiritual platform. Then one absorbs oneself very easily in meditating upon Krishna's activity, because that's just what happens. It's not that they have to sit down and force and go through a thing and this and that. No, it just naturally happens. So one can do that, one can go through and try to remember. But one will find is that to the degree the mind is spiritualized, to that degree that's easy or difficult. So if it's difficult, then we find it's probably because the mind has not been spiritualized. And so as the mind becomes spiritualized,
then we find that it's nice, it's easy.
Lahiri, please be merciful and give that spiritual understanding to me. Babaji, when you give up all material arguments and doubts, and when you chant the holy names day after day, then after a few days, genuine spiritual understanding will rise in your heart. As long as those material arguments remain, your mind will stay in the shackles of material understanding. When you taste the nectar of the holy name, the material shackles will become loosened. Then the spiritual world will be gloriously manifested in your heart. Material arguments, we're always trying to... These are here, arguments and doubts. How would I mention it? Doubts and misgivings.
I doubt this is that. I don't put my faith there. Doubt means lack of faith. Misgiving means something I don't like. You know, argument means I don't like this. You know, this guy said this, why did he say this? Should be this, that? You know, why is he doing this? Why is that one doing that? This one did this for me, why that? I mean, we're looking for material justice, material perfections. Like that. So we're always arguing, you know, establishing ego, intelligence, mind, senses, something. We're trying to establish or taste all those things. So these two things. So here he's making material arguments and doubts, and Prabhupada uses the word doubts and misgivings. Same thing. Like that. We don't like something, you know. Why this person is in charge? Or why is there a platform of someone in charge? Why aren't we all just equal? Yes.
Some
Vaishnavas saying
that actually doubts or lack of faith come from the action of sinful activities. Can you explain
this? Means the, when there's sinful activity, then there's the seed is created to do it again. Means when you do an activity, it creates a seed. Right? You want to do it again. Then, when you do it again, that seed sprouts. Like that. So then a doubt comes, is that, will I actually be happy doing this? Is it actually good? What about, you know, this, if I have this wealth or this position or this, you know, some security or some other thing, then I'll be, that'll be good. So there's some doubt in the transcendence, in the transcendental, because of the reaction being the material desire. It's not necessarily directly that is the Parabdha karma. Yes, and Parabdha is the reaction that's happened. Right? Let's say that we have performed... Okay, we have... we've stolen something. So that we've stolen it, it'll create the desire to do it again. So that's a feature, see. From stealing that, then it'll start to grow a plant. It'll sprout. You know, so the karma of the reaction that we'll get for that stealing has already been started. Then it will create a situation that will be sitting there someplace and then we'll be identified, and then the reaction is the police catch us. And then we'll be punished for that. Like that. But that seed, that fourth element, that has been created already. So then even we're in jail, and we'll be there and then we'll see an opportunity, we'll steal something there. The other guy has a better steel cup than we've got, so we'll steal that. You know, like that. And so then, and that will then create another seed. So then, it's not necessarily that the doubt is the reaction, you know, meaning the prarabdha karma. The fourth one where we're caught means the seed is called bija. When it sprouts, it's putaj. When then it grows into the situation in which you'll get the result, that's called phulanuti. And then the result is called prarabdha. Like that. There's also some other terms like that, but that's what comes to my mind. So then the difficulty comes is then that bija is there. But much of the time it may be a reaction like that, but it also many times is due to the seed. That we have faith in these seeds. Like that. Because they were our means to happiness. Like that. The happiness itself is something else. Just I've attained that. Is my happiness. The stealing, I got something, then I say I'm happy. Because in my mind is, if I can get this thing, then I'll be happy. So when I get it, I say I'm happy. So it's just an experience. It's not something tangible. like that. But you perform an activity in which you say, I am happy. Right. Does that make sense? So the desire, the attraction to something, the need for something, these are just experiences. They're just feelings. But you must perform an activity in which then you will get your need. You know? And that will then create the attraction for that need and activity again.
For example, when the disciple had a hard time to understand and talking about the spiritual master, means you see that many natural desires.
Yeah, basically that's there. Yeah. Because otherwise, what's the big deal? Because if you find fault there, then you don't have to take it very seriously. Right? If he's not so good or doesn't know or this or that, so therefore, you know, therefore I don't have to get so involved. So therefore, whatever's my material, because if it was simply that, it was simply that there's a doubt of whether they know this or that. But generally you'll check, and the one, then you'll see on the other side there's all kinds, a whole list of material needs and endeavor. Those that the list is bigger on the doubts on the one side, on the other you'll see the list is, you know, big. Like that. But if it's simply they see some doubts there, but there are no here, then it's a matter of they're just trying to work out. And then you can clear those doubts. Those doubts can be cleared. The doubt is not the problem. It's whether we want to let go of these doubts. So this platform of material arguments and doubts, this is called anartha nivritti. So anartha nivritti is successful when we want it to be successful. But if we don't want it to be successful, then it won't be successful. Krishna is not going to force us to give up our material doubts and arguments. Because they're wrong, he will go through the motions of putting you in the situations in which you will go through an experience that should correct your mentality. Whether you do or not, that's another thing. Just like the thief, he must be punished. Whether he corrects his thieving mentality, that's another thing. You can't guarantee that. But they're doing this wrong, they must be punished. You know, so you must run them through the process that should rectify them. But whether they become rectified is another thing. So therefore, Krishna runs us through all these things. Then it is us whether we want to take advantage of that situation. The thief then could think, yes, this thieving is bad, see what it's gotten me into, and you know, what problem it causes for others. Why would it be bad? Because I want something, someone else's stuff, instead of honestly working, getting my own things that I can happily, you know, peacefully call mine. I'm taking someone else's by some cheating method. So I'm lazy, I don't want to work. I want to just get someone else's things, you know, like that. So it's based on envy. Like that. Jealousy is, you have, I also want, so I go out and get. So you have, and I have. But what I had is better than yours. It's a little later than yours. Yours is still the old, like that. But envy is what you have, I want that, and I'm going to take it from you. You know? So your unhappiness is my pleasure, because now I have it. You know that's the demoniac thing.
When we speak about the thief, so how do we understand this? When you have many fruits, okay, those fruits are the reactions that you get for your stealing. But since the fruits are also supposed to have seeds, so would it still mean that they have desires to steal further?
Fruits always have seeds.
Yeah, so how do we understand?
Where, when you think of a seed, where is the seed sit?
Hot.
Huh? No.
In the fruit.
Yeah, so then. Reaction always has. Means, always is the desire to do it again. They sit, so these desires sit in the heart.
So when he gets punished, wouldn't that be an unpleasurable experience? So what could happen?
It's an unpleasurable, but we're very determined. That's the thing, we're very determined. Like the example is given of the donkey. Like that. Donkey is interested in the female donkey, and so he's running after the female donkey, and she just spends her time kicking him in the face with both hind legs. You know, it's not a light, you know, play. It's serious. And so the example is given like that, is that even though it's so obvious that this place is a place of misery, and no one's become happy, we're determined we'll be happy. Okay, everyone else failed, but we'll be successful. And so then after a while, then we may get run down and decide we're not getting successful. So then the danger is then they go for impersonalism or voyeurism. But the actual thing is one should give up the attraction here and take up the attraction to the spiritual realm in Krishna's eternal pastime.
That's what's supposed to go on. That's what's supposed to happen.
That's what the material world is for, is it will give it up and take up the actual spiritual life. But because of the living entities, you know, as I say, this cheating propensity, you know, because it's conditioned propensity, he doesn't give it up. He'll trade the fruit of work for impersonalism or for voidism. So it's still material. You're still God. You're still the controller and enjoyer. You know, but it's like the sour grapes. I'll enjoy those grapes and you endeavor, and then when you can't get them, so then, they're sour. So anybody else is going after them, those grapes are sour, you're stupid. Why are you going after those? You just be satisfied not going after those. There's still, the impersonalist happiness is connected to the material world. That's why it's still considered material. Because their happiness is that I'm not in the material world. So it's based on the material world. Mm-hmm. Like that. It's actual shelter is the material world. Just like you say, we're good because that's bad. You know? Then that means that bad thing is actually the shelter of your purpose. Because without that, then you can't be happy. While we see the Vaishnava philosophy is the spiritual world is good, the relationship with Krishna is good and this and that. But because we have so much conditioned attention on the material nature, we have to point out that this is bad. So it looks like the impersonalists, same system. We use the same system. How to break the attachment to the material world is the same. But the difference is they're just trading one material situation for another, while we're trying to get rid of the whole thing. Therefore, we speak about the karma is bad, the jnani is bad, and the yogi is bad. Well, they'll talk about one of the others is not good, or two of the others are not good. But we'll say all three are not good.
You're mentioning that the material world is created for others, our desire to enjoy. What about the boundaries of people's desire?
It means everything has to exist in some. We need space. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
It means where do you put the Vaikuntha plant? It goes in space. But it's not space like here. It's transcendental space, so that's the Brahma-jyoti. It means everything here is a reflection of there. So your material space is an element here. Your spiritual space is the Brahma-jyoti. Okay. Because you have to, existence is there. Brahma-jyoti is existence. So everything must exist. It has to be based on something, some potency. How is it held up? How is it supported? Don't worry if it doesn't compute, because it's like the brain is limited and the spiritual is unlimited. So you can't stick the one into the other. There's not enough space in the material brain to put the transcendental, unlimited space.
Yes, this is what doubts, but in the third canto of Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila says that samshaya is doubt a symptom of intelligence.
Yeah, doubt is a symptom of intelligence. That's there, but material intelligence. But we use the thorn to take out a thorn. We use material intelligence to get rid of material intelligence. So material intelligence has been dovetailed with the spiritual. We call it spiritual as a spiritual intelligence. Like that. But then you have in the spiritual world spiritual intelligence. They can discriminate between what thing they should use to get the best result for Krishna. They want to cook this preparation. You want to cook a chapati, then they can identify, you know, flour. Like that. So they have spiritual intelligence. It's not material intelligence. Because it's only for how to please Krishna. While here the material intelligence is how to go away from Krishna. So it's a symptom of intelligence. But what is intelligence to be used for? So now, what doubt is there? What should we be doubting? See, here it's not when you give up all material arguments and doubts. But then you can chant. You know, you can chant nicely. Then you can get a taste. But if you have doubt that I can be happy in this material world, I can only be happy in the spiritual world. Then you're talking nicely. You're spiritualized or spiritual intelligence. So the problem is material. As we talked before about the material mind. So now we're talking about material intelligence. Yeah? Before was material ego. You know, the whole Varnashram is material ego. But you dovetail it for Krishna, it's nice. You have the mundane mind. It meditates on things and decides, I take this, don't take this. So when it's not purified, it just meditates on material energy and sense gratification. But when it's spiritualized, it will meditate on Krishna. Intelligence, then they'll have material doubts and arguments. And when it becomes spiritualized, then you'll discriminate between the spiritual world and the material world. And then within the spiritual world, you can make distinction. What is for this particular situation, Krishna's happiness, what would be the best thing to do? So then you get that spiritual.
Why does Krishna inform the conditioned souls about the Brahma Jyoti at all?
Because you have to, it means, it's, how you say it? You have night, you have day, and you have the Sunday. So it's the Sunday between the material and the spiritual. Because the soul is Brahman, the spiritual world is Brahman. It's actually even the material world is Brahman. But it's an inferior Brahma. Yeah. So we have to learn the principle of the Brahma and being distinguished on the spiritual platform is there. As it's a situation, it's not a goal. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, it's just like cooking. You cook in the kitchen. It's a situation, it's not the goal. My goal is not to get into the kitchen. You know, the kitchen is a situation I use to get a goal of something that I can cook, that I can, an offering I can give to Krishna. Yeah. So therefore, to get the offering, I go into the kitchen. So to serve Krishna, I go into the realm of Brahman. But I go into the spiritual Brahman, because in the Brahman, then you have Goloka. Does that make sense? Because the path of Brahman takes us out of the material world. Liberation means takes us out of the material world. Therefore, we use Dharma as a tool to create liberation. So we don't go for dharma, artha, kama, or moksha, like that. We go for dharma, moksha, prema. But our goal is prema. But we'll use the tool of dharma and moksha to get freed from the material world. Therefore, artha and kama we don't bother with. It means you perform dharma, automatically artha comes. But that's not our interest. And we don't engage in sense gratification. Senses are engaged in Krishna service, but not without that. So our focus is the other way. It's not down, it's up. So then, in other words, then it's the intelligence, the platform of Buddhi Yoga, then understands and uses these techniques. You know, like these techniques we were talking before about seeing the separateness from the material energy, how it's functioning, the modes of nature. Those are all techniques of Brahman realization, of jnana. So those tools then break karma, material karma, material endeavor. They break that, and then one pulls back. So then it brings one to the liberated platform. But liberation is useless if it doesn't culminate in serving Krishna. Because one is not actually liberated. Liberation is defined as rendering eternal service to Krishna. Right? Being situated in the transcendental platform of eternal service to Krishna, that's called liberation.
Right? The downfall of the soul into the material world, that does the soul go directly from wherever its situation is in the spiritual world to the material world, or is it gradually in the spiritual world?
No, it will go from the spiritual situation to Lord Brahma. And then from Brahma, then generally down to the sages. And then from the sages, then down to, you know, just keeps going until you hit the worm and stool. And then from there, then you figure, well, maybe I should start going the other way.
It's not that from Goloka you go through Vaikunthas and gradually to Brahmadip and Lord Brahma.
No, see, is Tathasta Shakti means you have Tathasta energy, right? So you don't have the Tathasta energy really is not functioning in Goloka. It functions in Gokula, not in Goloka. There is no difference. One is situated up and one is situated down. So Gokula is what's situated here. Goloka is what's situated there.
So we don't raise them there or here?
They're the same place. Okay. But since we're coming from the Tathasta Shakti, Tathasta Shakti is what arranges for jivas and the material energy in the spiritual world all be in the same place at the same time. So that is your Gokul. So that's one of the energies at play there. So then the soul can be there and see the spiritual, see the material, and make a choice.
Is it that one something where you're eternally conditioned?
You have to understand what the term eternally conditioned means. It means it's so long, who can say it? How can you be eternally conditioned? The material world doesn't manifest eternally. It manifests unmanifest, manifests unmanifest. So it's unmanifest, how can you say you're conditioned? Right? Because you're on the Brahman platform. When the souls all go back into Mahavishnu, they're on the Brahman platform. They're in Vasudeva Sattva. They're liberated. But because in their heart there's the desire for, then when he breathes out, then they manifest the desires again. So it's for understanding. But you can't, eternal means what? If there's an end, if you can be liberated, how can you be eternally conditioned? Just right there, it defeats that whole thing. Right? But at the same time, we say they're eternally liberated. But if you can begin, let's say today I become liberated and become a perfect devotee of Krishna, there was a beginning. So how can I say it's eternal? Eternal means no beginning, no end. So if you can get out of the material world, you can't call it eternal.
You can't say it's actually eternally conditioned. And if you can get into the spiritual world, you can't say that's eternal by this mundane definition. So therefore, one who's in the material world is called Nityabhata, because how long he's been here, how long he'll stay here, who can say? Therefore, it's called Nitya, eternal. Right? How many grains of sand on the beach?
Unlimited.
We'll say unlimited. But is it actually unlimited? You could count down to the exact one that's there. There's only so many, there's only a finite amount of grains of sand because it's so great you call it unlimited. So living has been here, it's a term. People take it too seriously. If you take your grammar as being substance, then you can make this mistake. The Sanskrit grammar is also a mundane subject. But it's a very good subject to use in Krishna's service, right? Like if you have an apple. It's mundane, it's made out of material energy. But if it's in good shape, it's pure, it's a good thing to use in Krishna's service. Well, an old, rotten, stinky one is not. You understand? So if we're so attached to the apple, you know, and that's perfection, then one will always make these mistakes. One will take the language too seriously. But just by definition, eternal means no beginning, no middle, no end. So if you can be liberated from the material world, the definition of eternally conditioned doesn't mean anything. The word eternal is simply a poetic thing, to give an understanding. Otherwise, the word eternally conditioned means there's absolutely no way by nature that the living entity could get free from the material condition. Otherwise, we can't call him Nityabhata. Nitya means nitya. If we're going to take it, anadi, yes, then it goes both ways. You can't have eternal one way and not the other. Otherwise, there's Nityabhata. Nityasiddha. Why is it that can have a beginning but no end? And the other one, if we say no, I'm not, it means the beginning. But they say Nitya. So it's just semantics. It's just intellectual prostitution. That's what it is. That's all it is. It's absolutely the most absolutely useless discussion and intellectual absorption that there is. Absolutely useless. No one has gone back to Godhead thinking this. There's been prostitutes engaged in their occupational duty going back to Godhead. But you'll never find one jnani going back to Godhead thinking this. So it's the lowest of the low useless arguments. Because it's just grammar. Vyakaran, it's a mundane subject. There's nothing spiritual about it. If it's engaged in Krishna's service, yes. But this is not engaging in Krishna's service. This is attachment to one's understanding of a word. Your own understanding. Has nothing to do with reality. And even if one has been here eternal, who cares? Who cares? Who cares? Jiva means in between. That means you had to have seen the spiritual world. If you say you never saw the spiritual world, then you're not talking, you don't accept Jiva. You don't accept Tathasta. We're so caught up and we're so expert in this word anadi, but we can't understand the grammatical meaning of tatasta in the middle. It means you can see both. You make a choice. So if you haven't seen the spiritual world, where's the choice? If you say you're here, then how is that? And how can you be here? You had to be put here. So what happened to that? Creation means you were not here, you were put here. So if you're eternal, that means, eternally, it means you have to be part of the material energy. So I mean, it's a useless nonsense discussion. Therefore, Acharyas say, don't bother with it. And someone like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, if all we have to do is say, you fell from Brahman, and gone, finished. No one will ask another question. But everything is Brahman. That's the thing. Therefore, the advanced person, seeing it to be the most useless discussion, then they just say, we fell from Brahman. But when you're in Mahavishnu, or you're in the Pradhan, Mahatattva, that's Brahman, it's defined as Brahman, Vasudeva. The consciousness of Vasudeva, the consciousness, is when the Mahatattva is there. Brahman, mixed with time and the living entities, it becomes alive. That's called Mahatattva, it's the Vasudeva, etc. Then from there, it comes down to the next, the Shankarshan, the ego manifests. Right? Then after that, the next level is Prajumna, then when the intelligence and senses manifest. Right? And then Aniruddha, when the mind manifests. Okay? So all these levels are there, but it's Brahman level, it's Brahman platform. But you had to be put there. You're not naturally there. You know, so there's so much there. From grammar you cannot understand. One has to understand the beginning. It says sambandha adhidaya prayojana.
It's actually very good that I had the discussion with you, because I had the same discussion with you and Jiva Mahasaji.
Yeah.
That doubt remained in my mind.
Yeah, because they're grammarians. They do not know the prayojana shastras. They do not study the adhidaya shastras. They study tattvas. Though they say they study sandarbhas, this and that, but I have never heard them discuss rasa. So it's like tattva ends at the Brahma Jyoti. On the other side of that, there's no talk of tattva. Not for us. If you're going to Vaikuntha, yes. Not for us.
This is not part of Samban, this is not part of Abhidaya. It's not part of Prayodana. So what do you give more use to that?
Yeah, that's a good point. What's the relationship? Nityabhaya. So what's the relationship? Well, what's the relationship with the material world? It can't even be eternal. You can't have an eternal relationship with the material world. It's temporary. Therefore, it's just meaning that those souls who are materially conditioned, which is a state of consciousness, right, nitya body, you can't say that I'm in this body, it changes. So what is there is the consciousness. Nitya body means the consciousness, nitya siddha means the consciousness. So nitya body means I think I am God. And nitya siddha means I understand I'm not God, I'm servant of God. So tatastha means I don't think either. That's the point.
When do you make the choice? When do you make the choice to enter into the material world and live independently on?
Well, probably next to that, when you want to enjoy it like Krishna. You see Krishna's enjoyment and decide, that looks pretty good, I like that.
where do you decide? In the spiritual world or somewhere in between?
Material, as I mentioned in the beginning, the living entity is in this material world by the arrangement of tatastha shakti. Without the tatastha shakti, without its energy, how do you put together, means the material world and the living entity. It's like oil and water, they don't mix. Right? But an expert cook can get the two to mix for enough time to make things work. Right? So therefore, tatastha shakti arranges that the living entity is able to function within this material world. Yes.
You're speaking of the tatastha shakti as if it's some entity or personality.
Because all energy is a personality.
My understanding of the personality of the Tathasta Shakti Tattva was that it was the image of Judas themselves.
They're there, but it's still the arrangement of that Shakti, because there's existence. You know? That's the thing.